The songs are There Goes My Baby, This Magic Moment, Spanish Harlem, Stand By Me, and a host of others. The singer is Benny King, a smooth, cool voice whose continuing effect on pop music cannot be measured. The year was 1958, and it all started for Benny in New York City, where he was with a group called the Five Crowns.
That brings back a lot of memories, man. I had great fun during that time, really recording, yeah. And the fellas was really, yeah, on the ball. That was our first record in the studio, as a matter of fact, you know, as a New Drifters. And we had a ball, like I said, yeah.
You went into the studio cold, first recording session?
Really cold, man, like very unrehearsed, you know, the whole scene, yeah.
And what was it like? Had you heard the song beforehand?
I was fortunate because I wrote the song. So I was ahead of everybody. But once we got inside, you know, like Jerry Wexler says, well, you know, who's going to do the leading, you know? So at the time, I wasn't doing leading. I was like a baritone singer in the group, and Charlie Thomas was doing all the leading. And while I was showing him the song, you know, and how it should go, Jerry got impatient. He said, oh, man, you know, let's dismiss with all this. Who doing it, man? You do it, you know? And I get started like that, yeah.
And that was 1958.
Yeah.
And then 1959?
Well, 1959 brought out, like, the other tunes, of, like, This Magic Moment and things like that, you know.
After There Goes My Baby, did you think that you could do it again? Did you think there could be another hit like that?
Not really. I was just happy just being in the studio, I guess, you know. And we had great writers, so I was, like, thrilled about the whole thing, yeah. And the fellas and I, we were just really into our whole dream, you know, just being in the studio with the writers along with Sardis, you know.
And then along came This Magic Moment.
Yeah, another dream.
Magic moment, so different and so new, was like any other, until I kiss you, and then it happened, it took me by surprise.
The late 50s saw Benny King leading the Drifters through a string of hits. Songs like Dance With Me and Oh My Love.
Dum, 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 dum.
Oh My Love.
Dum, dum.
Oh My Love.
Dum.
You know that I still I love you so.
Singing styles changed since those days?
Oh, yeah, a lot, really.
Is it really tough to sing that way? I mean, is it as hard as what you have to do now?
Well, my voice has changed. Gotten heavier, you know, much more heavier. I'd say I'm almost a bass singer now. During that time, I was like 18, you know, and like my voice was still like at a very high pitch.
And, well, like, your voice was ready for the next one, then.
It was definitely ready then. At that time, I was very fortunate then because we had great writers around, you know, like Goffin and King, Carol, I'm speaking of, and we had Doc Palmer, Morty Schumann, you know, Lieben Stoller, Bill Spector. I mean, people that was really into writing, man. And they would write, you know, just for the artists that they're involved with. You know, it wasn't like they'd sit down and write a batch of songs and say, hey, you know, anybody come and look at it. They'd sit right down, you know, and work with the artists. You know.
Can you remember the first time you heard Save the Last Dance For Me?
I was up to the office in the rehearsing room anyway, at Atlantic Records, you know, and they said, well, we have some more material for you, and so they pulled out the pack of songs, and like we looked it over, yeah, And when I came across Save the Last Dance, I knew right then and there, I said, well, this is a hit. During those times, it was great because you really could feel when a record was a hit piece of material. It's different today. Like today, you don't get that same feeling. You pick up and hope, you know?
Yeah.
From the time you look at the lyrics, you're hoping. You say, wow, I love the lyrics myself, but will the people love it?
In the early part of 1960, Benny King went solo.
Yeah.
And if anybody was, at the time, was
going to
say...
More afraid. Scared to start all over again.
But anybody that was predicting the disaster turned out to be off base, because the first one was Spanish Harlem. Phil Spector was the producer. He was the writer on that, too, wasn't he?
Phil Spector.
A young Phil Spector.
Yeah.
A young Benny King.
And, like, you know, Jerry and Lieber, you know, they were there, you know, with this. I was very afraid of Spanish Harlem. It was different. It was so different that I was really afraid of it. It was something that I had never done before. And at that time, I was singing free in the studio. They'd say, well, you know, they'd give me a song, say, okay, sing it the way you want to sing it. And that was easy. But when I came across Spanish Harlem with the pros, man, they say, this is how it has to go, you know. And I said, oh, wow. So you joke it. Not bad.
There is a rose in Spanish Harlem, a red rose up in Spanish Harlem. It is a special one, it's never seen the sun. It only comes out when the moon is on the run and all the stars are gleaming. It's growing in the street right up through the...
People probably wondered whether you could top that. And you did with a song you wrote yourself.
Yeah, I wondered the same thing. I said to myself, I said, well, where do we go from here? You know? And when I came into the studio, we was rehearsing. And he said, well, Ben, do you have any songs that you might have written? I said, well, one, you know. And I pulled this out, yeah.
Stand By Me.
Yeah.
What is it, you know, I think that... Stand By Me is, of all the classics that we've been going through, is the most classic in some senses.
It is, yeah.
You know, I presume you've performed it several million times by now.
Right, even now, you know, today I have to do it even, like, in the act, yeah.
When the night has come and the land is dark and the moon is the only light we'll see, no, I won't be afraid. Oh, I won't be afraid, just as long as you stand by me.
What was it like having one hit after another like this?
Well, at that time, I was so thrilled about, I guess, recording, like, still, because I'd never thought of singing by myself. Ever since I was about 9 years old, I've been singing, you know, but never alone. I've always had to sing in church choirs or groups. So, like, when I began to sing by myself and hit that microphone alone, you know, it was great. And at that time, I wasn't involved with saying, well, I feel great because it's number one. I just felt great because I was involved with good music, man. And, like, people around me was professionals. And it was just too beautiful, really, you know. It's like everybody was there, had a dream to, like, fulfill. And, like, I was one of them, yeah. And they all built it around me, which was even greater, yeah.
And you just kept right on. Will You Love Me Tomorrow?
That's a fabulous
tune.
It is, really. I had a great time doing that one as well, because it was one of the Carole King things, and during that time she was writing even strong like she is today, yeah.
Tonight your mind completely, you give your love so sweetly. Tonight the light of love is in your eyes. Will you still love me tomorrow? Is this a lasting treasure, or just a moment's pleasure? Can I believe the magic of your side? Will you still love me tomorrow?
Followed this one up with Don't Play That Song, which is sort of you were moving back and forth between a little bit of a rocker, a little bit of a yeah. ballad.
Well, I think that one of the things that I do like about what I've been doing and what I've done is the fact that I've never been labeled in any one direction, which sometimes I say, well, wow, I wish I was like Fast Domino. You only have to do one
same
song.
Ding, chords, ding, ding, ding. Right?
Yeah, you know, Blueberry Hill and everything, man, right there. You know? You don't have to go looking for it, you know, so I lay it right there, you know. So, like, I've never had that chance, man, because, like, I've never had a string of hits that were the same each time, like, everything different, man. Like, you know? And I feel good about that now. Yeah. Really, after looking back and playing the things, everything was different. Even today, it's the same, yeah.
Now, when you're performing today, do you do a medley? I mean, this gets a whole act here before you even get into your new songs.
yeah, I do a medley of things, you know, from the past. Yeah.
Right, now, Don't Play That Song. That was one that, you know, along with Stand By Me and Spanish Harlem
right,
became,
right.
became a super classic. Who produced that one?
That was produced by Ahmed Erdogan, yeah. And my wife wrote it.
Oh.
That was her one contribution to music. After that, she just folded up. You know?
It's a good time to retire.
Yeah. She said, no more. This is it. My big one for the day and no more. And she stopped writing. She's never written since. Really.
What was the first time? When was the first time you heard that? Did she just come and say, I've got a written a song?
She like was fooling around in the house one day, you know. Like she was playing Stand By Me, and then she turned it off and she started writing, you know. So then she said, wow, I got an idea, you know. And I didn't pay any attention because she's always got an idea. So after a while, I sat down with her. I said, wow, I said, you have this, you know, this is something new. So she went downtown with Ahmed, you know, and sat down with him and played it on the piano and stuff. And it came out to be a good record, really. Yeah.
Great
Don't
record.
Play it no more. Don't play it no more. Don't play it no more. No, 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 no. Don't play that song for me. It brings back memories of days that I once knew, the days I spent with you. Oh, no, don't let it play.
After that, Phil Spector came back for more.
Yeah, right.
And that was another change of pace.
Right.
Can you tell us a little bit about that? You know, that again, is sort of surprising. You know, it's like you never followed one hit.
Yeah, right. Up to that time, I said, well, now we have a direction, you know. And they said, forget it. And right back again, we switched off and went to an altogether different feeling of music, you know, which was great because I felt that I could handle a song like that. I wasn't sure, but I've always enjoyed singing ballads, you know, and it was a treat.
You think your voice had a chance to develop over this period of time because you were able to do a ballad and have a hit with a ballad?
Yeah, I was going to school at the same time I was recording. I was really going to school. I was learning about how to handle my voice, how to handle songs, and how to get the best message across with that particular tune, you know.
Did you always record in the New York area?
Not always. I've done a few things down in Muscle Shoals and things mm-hmm. like that. But that was not too long ago. It was just a few years back. Yeah.
Who were some of the musicians that worked on songs like Spanish Harlem and, Amor, things like
wow.
that?
It's hard.
They just...
Mostly studio men.
Studio men.
Yeah, mostly.
And they changed from song
yeah,
to song.
Yeah, yeah.
Didn't have any feeling of bringing them all back because of the last
Well, Atlantic had a very weird... way of handling their studio things, and they would never, very very rarely, they bring in the same group of people, you know, because I guess they didn't want to make it sound as if they were copying or trying to get the same sound off one record to another. So they would
always have a different feel.
Yeah, they would get a different feeling and a different set of musicians, even at the same date, you know, from one tune to another.
Would that throw you off at all?
Well, not really.
When you came in to do the singing, which was always a constant?
Not really, because they were really, really professionals, like I said, and, they would have their scores all made out, and, the guys would come in and, read it right down, you know. I would give more problems than the music would, you know, because I'd be changing words and trying to, you know, really get the feeling in between myself and the band and what was going on there, you know.
Is that the way this one happened?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. This was a very exciting thing. I enjoyed this, you know, because it was my first time doing a tune of that kind, yeah. So I really enjoyed it very much, yeah. You can tell from the groans and the moans.
Amor, amor, my love. This word so sweet that I repeat means I adore you. And amor, amor, would you deny this heart that I have placed before you? I can't find another word with meaning so clear. My lips try to whisper sweeter things in your ear.
Amor, Benny King went on to I Who Have Nothing, a really great, great soul ballad that... Even, you know, the title just hangs there. You know, it's I get chills when I think about it. And then when I think about it being sung, you know. You know, a lot of your songs are very interesting because they're the kind of songs that make just anybody who hears them want to get up on stage with a microphone and sing them, you know.
Everybody at one time or another have had this feeling about this particular song, you know. And I've been very fortunate to run across lyrics like this that... It could easily grab a person and say, yeah, man, this happened to me as well. What a drag. You know, I should be singing this song. Was made for me.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure there are a lot of people, you know, who sneak in front of the mirror and go, the little Stand By Me, a little I Have Nothing.
Right.
But it's true. It's, you know, it's that feeling. Now, we talked before about your voice and the way you've sort of been, you know, going down the scale.
You've noticed
time went on.
It happened.
And I Who Have Nothing is a perfect example.
Yeah.
You were... Getting down there into the really low feelings.
A matter of fact, the song that we played just before this, which was Amor, when I did that, I got a big write-up in one of the papers about I was trying to copy Brooke Benton. You know, he got very disturbed about that. You know, he said, hey, you're just taking my style. But I didn't do that with that intention, just that my voice was changing.
Yeah.
And I could make the low notes comfortably, you know.
So and then you followed it up with I Have Nothing.
Right, and I followed it up with that.
Which surprised everybody, including Brooke Benton, probably.
And me.
I who have nothing. I who am no one, adore you and want your soul. I'm just a no one.
with nothing to give you but all.
After I Have Nothing, you ran into it, a young fellow named Bob Gallo,
yeah,
who has had a string of hits on his own, and you did some things, including a classic called What Is Soul.
Yeah,
it's like,
right,
you know, people talk about things that, you know, like rumblings in the underground. Mm. This is a song that everybody has to know about,
yeah,
you know,
right,
if they really want to be with it and know, you know,
yeah,
the history of the whole thing.
Well, the song,
how did that come about? Did you write that?
Well, Bob and I did, yeah, because at the time he was working with Atlantic, and we were there, and, well, he came up with the wild idea of it, you know, and then we added words in, you know, and I just didn't believe him. He started pulling out all these strange sounds and things. I said, well, other than the fact that the guy's a little sick, I said, nobody's going to pay any attention to him. And I didn't believe that he'd actually get those sounds in the studio, but really he did it, man. Other than the fact that we had been together working on the song for a long time, we became very good friends, which helps a lot in,
yeah,
this business, because like when you work closely with someone, you like to feel, okay, other than this piece of paper that we're holding, what else do we have in common?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Bob and I, we really hit into a very groovy friendship thing, man, and like we work together well, you know.
And then, and What Is Soul sort of electrified the whole,
yeah,
world.
Yeah, well, What Is Soul opened up the world for me, really. I've now, since I've recorded What Is Soul, I've gone to Europe. I can't even count the times. Since 1963, I've gone twice a year. And What Is Soul did that for me. It opened up channels in Canada for me that was closed before. Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, it was the first, the very first soul record to ever open up the market in Canada. It had never been opened
to sound.
Yeah. So it was great, you know, because we got a lot out of the song, other than laughing at it after we finished doing it. Saying, what is this? How did we do it? Yeah. It really had a ball, man. Yeah.
What is soul?
And then you followed it up with Tears, Tears, and,
yeah,
Catherine.
Right.
Just before the sun is ready to say goodnight, and the moon comes out of hiding to share its light, I think about the things we used to do. I heard his mother talking about you, saying how cute you are. Oh, but for her son, girl, you'll never do. And here's one more thing I've got to let you know.
Fabulous songs.
Yeah.
And which brings us to right now, today.
Yeah, well,
where Bob Gallo is still around.
Still around.
Benny King is still here writing songs.
Both of us crazy, driving the world crazy, but that's okay. They need us badly, we'd say.
They've been working on this new album for a while now, and you've got all sorts of things. I'm excited about a lot of them, including a version of Van Morrison's Into the Mystic, which we'll hear in a little while.
Yeah.
But let's start with Traveling Woman, which you wrote yourself.
Yeah, right.
How do you feel about this in relation to all the things
all
we've just
things
heard?
All the things I've done.
And the way you're writing songs now.
Well, I feel still strong about all the things that I do. I think every writer is like a painter. Once he finishes the piece, that's a masterpiece. And whether he goes on or not, he'd still have, you know, great feelings for his work. Yeah.
And so this one song is something that you've put yourself into.
Yeah, right.
And no matter what anybody else thinks of it, it's still...
Right. A great... Right. Yeah, we like Bob and I, we don't say, well, when we finish, it's going to be a great hit. We just say, let's make it as good as possible while we're together. And we, you know, we're lucky because it turns out that we both like it once we're finished with it. Thank you.
Yeah, that's really solid.
Yeah, I felt great doing that. Yeah.
It's got a lot of punch to it. That's really interesting because your voice once again comes right in. You know, fits right into the way you're doing the music.
Yeah, I've been very fortunate. Like I said, even doing like there's always a lapse period in everybody's life for some reason or another. You know, I never say well I should stay on top because of any certain reason. People change. Attitudes change, songs change. I've changed, Bob changed, you know. So we all now get together again and say, okay, well, this is where we're at now, and this is what we like doing. You know?
It seems much more complex now and much more prearranged, and you really have to work it out,
right.
Or else everybody's going to be stepping the horns will be stepping on the drummer.
Right.
I guess it's Goodbye is another song from the album.
Yeah, right.
Another one that... you and
Bob wrote
this one.
Yeah.
I guess it's Goodbye. What's the difference? I guess Bob's a bad example because you are very close with him and you work very close with him. But when somebody else develops a song, what is it that makes you want to sing it? You can't write all your own songs yourself.
Yeah, I can't. I wouldn't try it. Right. Well, when I run across a piece of material that I feel fits my style or my voice, it's mostly the story that it has and the range that it carries me in. And like you say, Bob is a very bad example because Bob knows me so well that he can write like for me as if I'm sitting down at a piano myself, and he don't have to ask me what key are you going to do it, and he knows exactly. He said, come in, man, this is in G, start it right there, and I can do it comfortably without even saying I should change it.
And what's the process involved, say, when you hear a song, whether you write it yourself or when it is finished, and then you and Bob have to go into the studio and come out with a record. I guess it's Goodbye.
How? Yeah.
What What's involved in realizing that as a song?
Well, trying to create something that you haven't heard before musically, which is more his end of the job than mine. But me trying to sing it and get the most important lines across to the people. Because, like, it's very hard on that 2 and 3 minutes to really get that story across. But together, we managed to do it well, I think, yeah. Or we do the best we can with it, yeah.
Why is my heart so filled with pain at this time, my love? A time when I'm finally reaching my place in this world. Oh, love. A man came to take you that day. He said you had nothing to say. He gave an excuse for his wrong. And now I'm just singing this song. I guess it's goodbye.
Feel sort of lonely working with all those instruments and hoping that they're all going to do the right thing while you're doing the right thing?
Not really. Because, like, I found that the majority of times, whatever musicians we would pick up, man, they have their thing together too, you know. Yeah. And the weirdest thing about it is, like, a lot of musicians today are very temperamental, man. They don't work on certain things. It's almost like you have to audition for the musicians, you know what I mean? But it's great, you know, because all the things that we've been doing and the things that we hope to do in the future, they're all good songs. You know, we don't write just anything. We take great pride in our work, you know, and we try to sit down and really come up with a masterpiece. I would prefer writing one song in my lifetime that would last a lifetime than to write a million songs that would just hold out for that period of time. I wouldn't want to be someone that write a little popsy-wopsy tune that say, "Whoa, man, great, you know, I made $1 million. I would like to sit down and say, wow, each year I can hear that song well done by some great artist. You know? I love that. Bob, we both feel the same about songs. You know?
Well, but now we're going to go to the test because we're going to hear one that you did write called White Moon that's on the new album.
All right.
White Moon, surrounded by blue skies. I feel only you know why I'm sitting here. With these tears in my eyes, my life seems so totally wasted. A smiling face that was once mine, I have misplaced it. And you're the only friend I have left to depend on. Had a lot of friends at one time, but seems now they're all gone. When I run into the darkness of my room, white moon, surrounded by bright stars, how can a lonely man handle this world of tomorrow?
White Moon by Benny King. Besides that, on the album, you've done a couple other pieces of material by other people.
Yeah.
Like the band Morrison's Into the Mystic.
Right.
Which I'm about to hear for the first time, and I'm very excited about. Can you tell me a little about picking that song to do?
Well, that song was easy because it's a beautiful piece of material, you know, so, like, we didn't have to even fuss about doing it, you know. Said, well, I'm going to play this, you know, and, like, we played it, and that was it. The decision was made right then and there. Okay, great, we got to do this one, yeah.
Do you feel sometimes, like, because you are recording and you're constantly having to put out albums and stuff, that you have to sort of keep track of what everybody else is doing.
Like, yeah.
You
oh, know, yeah.
Well, to know about a Van Morrison, right. To know about this, to know about that.
That's like, like I said before, like you're always in school. Like I'm still in school. And part of your homework is to keep up on what's happening out here. Yeah. Yeah. You have to. You have to check everybody, man, and not to turn down anyone. Your nose got to stay level, you know, because once it goes up, you miss a lot of great tunes, man. Yeah.
And the result was that you found Into the Mystic.
Yeah, right.
Born before the wind, also younger than the sun. Everybody both but one, as we sailed into the mystic. Hark now, hear the sailors cry. Smell sky. Let your soul and spirit fly into the mystic.
I guess you've been told an awful lot of times you got a great voice.
Oh, thank you.
That's fabulous. That's really great.
I enjoy listening to a lot of things that we do, especially like after we finish, you know, because once I hear it back, I always say to myself, could I have done any better than that, you know? And like with a song like In the Mystic, I know that I couldn't have done any better. Yeah.
Well, if you can, the double shocker, because the first one's fabulous. That's great. Do you pick like lots of different pieces of material and then sort of record them all and eliminate ones that you're not going to put on the album?
Yeah, we've done that. Yeah.
Is that effective? It's so that you have that little extra edge.
Yeah, it is. But it helps us a lot because we sometimes we would head out and we know. We have an idea, let's say, where we want to go and what we want to do, but to kind of reassure the idea, we kind of add a little thing in there that would say, well, maybe this will fit and maybe this won't, you know. But to be sure that this is what we want, let's put this in and that in, you know.
And put it together.
Yeah, and put it together that way. Yeah.
And so this resulted in Traveling Woman.
Yeah.
And I guess it's Goodbye, White Moon into the Mystic,
yeah.
And a song called Take Me to the Pilot.
Right, Elton Johnston.
Yes. Very fabulous. Yeah. How did you decide to do that one?
Well, Elton John is a very close friend of Bob's, and we've met only through letters and phone, him and I. But the song itself has a message, you know, and it's the kids are very hip to it, and like I want to try a song of that nature, you know. A song with like without the love lyrics, but a deeper meaning, you know. So I said, wow, you know, let me get into this, man, because I can dig it, you know. See, and like it's good. It's always good to explore. I love exploring. I'm not afraid. You know, like sometimes the public say, well, that's not a Benny King record, man, you know. But who's to say what belonged to who, you know?
Yeah.
That's a good example of being labeled when they say, well, it doesn't belong to you, you know. I don't think that you should put yourself in a position to be labeled, you know. I think, hey, man, it's like cookies and candy, man. Try a taste of all of it, you know, try a little bit of all and enjoy some, you know.
Yeah. And so there's a lot to enjoy in this
album.
What's the name of the album, by the way?
The name of the album is The Beginning of It All.
The Beginning of It All.
Yeah.
Benny King, The Beginning of It All. And with that, I'd like to thank you very much for talking with us today.
Man, I thank you for your time.
All the way from, my goodness, a long time ago.
Yeah, well, right.
Right up to now.
All the way from 58, yeah.
And it winds up with what you're doing now, with Benny King doing Take Me to the Pilot.
If you feel that it's real, I'm on trial, and I'm here again in your prison. Like a corn in your mint, I am dented.